So, Andy, you sent me this text of a church sanctuary, and I don't know if you found it on the internet or if you took it, but basically, it's a picture of some people sitting in a church sanctuary, and on the wall, sort of the upper balcony wall of this church, they have a phrase that says, "May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, so that by the power of the Holy Spirit you may abound in hope." And then there's a tag, Romans 15:13. But in this picture, it when it says "May the God," they actually took a piece of paper and covered up God with the class of 2023. And then when it says "the power of the Holy Spirit," they took a piece of paper and covered up the word "Holy Spirit" and again put class of 2023. I have no idea what's going on in this picture. I'm really interested to find out.
Both my kids had go to this very, very progressive kind of magnet school. It's a public school, but it's a Montessori school, and they very much are trying to make citizens of the world, very much kind of pluralistic citizens who, engage all things and engage all people, engage all identities, engage all religions, and that really is true. They do that, and Carr and I really celebrate that, except, of course, there is one that they don't do, and that is they have been very, very explicit to my kids, all except like one teacher, that basically Christianity can go bleep off. You know what I mean? Like, they've even said in social studies and classes and things, like, all the bad stuff in the world has come through Christianity, and they really have no patience for Christianity. But here's the irony of all ironies, is that they needed their small school and they needed a space to have the graduation ceremony in. The only space that could be big enough to be able to have all the parents come in was a church. So they decided to have their graduation ceremony, the school that is as post-Christian as you could be, to have it in the sanctuary of a Lutheran church. So they, first of all, the stories go that they went to the church. The church was very hospitable. "Yes, we'd like to serve the community this way." And they asked, "Could we take down that cross because we find that offensive?" And they're like, first of all, no. And secondly, there's functionally no way we could take down that cross.
Bolted into the wall, probably, right, like every other church.
Yeah, like, I guess if you know, we could start to think about it if you would like to give us a $500,000 donation or something that we could, you know, pay to take it down. But I don't, you know, they would have said no to that too, to their credit, to the church's credit. So, but they, one of the things they could not, so they couldn't get rid of these symbols. They couldn't get rid of the baptismal font. They couldn't get rid of all that. But the one thing that they really wanted to deal with is on the two back walls in the sanctuary, these pictures that you've seen are two biblical texts, one from Psalms and one from Romans. And they hung signs in front of wherever it said Lord or God or Holy Spirit. They just hung graduation signs to cover up those words. And I particularly find that really, really fascinating. And one of the really odd ways, I mean, you know, one of the patron saints of this podcast is thinking about Charles Taylor. And so to kind of bring Taylor into this, this is one of the ways he thinks is a real dead-end way of engaging a secular age. First of all, I mean, I guess you could find this bias in Taylor or whatever, but first of all, he just doesn't think that. I mean, he's a Catholic, so he thinks that this is not the greatest way of respecting those religious perspectives. But he also just really thinks, you know, all the way back to sources of the self, that we need these moral sources of religion. But he ultimately, you know, there's always the, we maybe even have said this on this podcast, there's always this kind of thing about Taylor. Is he more really committed to his Catholic faith or to liberal democracy? You know, like, he ran for office. I think at his heart, he wants to really be working at how societies, late modern societies, become open and kind of pluralistic and in a positive way. And so one of the things that this points to that my school, that my kid's school has taken on, that Taylor absolutely was opposed to, is what the French call laïcité, which is a separation of church and state that got really radicalized. It was always kind of budding in the 80s and 90s, and Taylor actually ran for office, I think the late 80s, early 90s. People can look that up. But he ran for office in Quebec because he didn't want, one of the main reasons is he didn't want this French form of La Cité to come to, and I'm probably pronouncing that terribly, he didn't want that to come to Quebec.
My Canadian history isn't as good as it should be, and I apologize to my Canadian listeners, but was Quebec kind of a stronghold in Canada for the Catholic faith just based on its heritage compared to the rest of the provinces?
With Catholicism, most definitely, yeah.
I mean, like, was it sort of like a Bible, and this is maybe a rough comparison, but was it sort of like a Bible Belt we have in America where there's that bastion of religiosity? Was it sort of like that, yeah, but with the Catholic faith across Canada?
Yeah, I mean, they're almost
where other
like
provinces maybe became more secular and then Quebec was kind of one of the holdouts, or?
No, I think that the history is that kind of Canada, and here I'm out on a limb here too, but Canada became kind of secularized similarly across the provinces, but differently in Quebec because it was so Catholic. And it was a kind of, I guess you could kind of call it a Bible Belt, but it was very different in the sense that, I mean, just the Catholic expressions of faith are different. And one of the ways that they're different that Taylor is very, very interested in is how everything becomes disembedded, you know. So he sees over his lifetime that especially Catholicism was so good at this, that you, the neighborhood you lived in, the political party you voted for, the youth clubs that your kid was in, the schools that they went to, those things were all interconnected with the church and in the parish that your neighbor, the work union that you were part of, those all connected and were embedded within each other. And his point is these have all become, you know, kind of disconnected and pulled apart. But he's really, I think, at his core, one of the deepest kind of moral issues that Taylor wants to oppose is this certain kind of French view of separation of church and state, which is basically since 2010. I mean, it had its antecedents before that, and Taylor was trying to push back against it, but really had strong antecedents after 2010, which made assertions that say Muslim women could not wear the veil or the hijab or in public, so that no religious public symbols were allowed whatsoever. So Taylor really finds this to be problematic. He finds this to be a kind of problematic way of creating a liberal society that he, you know, this is goes back to what he really thinks it means to be human, and what it means to be human is to have a deep sense of what makes your life full. And so someone's religious expression and their religious commitment isn't just in some kind of small category of their religious identity. It's the way that they view life as full and complete. And it's you cannot separate it from its larger symbols and kind of perspectives. So he thinks that there's a possibility that inside of public square that you could actually invite people to be fully their religious selves, not just devoid of those religious symbols, and have a conversation about what makes life full and complete, that we could reflect on these experiences and actually find a way of acknowledging, maybe disagreeing on some things, but acknowledging that this is a way that you find fullness. And so in this very, it's just fascinating because my kid's school potentially does something very illiberal, you know, something in opposition to the liberal project here, and tries to shut down a certain religious expression. And they do something that's very kind of almost reverse colonial, which is they go into a community's religious space and they extract or cover up its symbols. I mean, this is something they would have been never have done if they went into a Hindu place of worship or into a Muslim mosque. First of all, those communities would have been like, no, you can't do that. You're welcome to be here, and we welcome you to do whatever even civic thing you want to do here, but not in a kind of stance of opposition to our symbols. And one of the most fascinating things about this school is they don't realize, I mean, the kind of, I don't know, let me be fair here, but the kind of ignorance here is that they cover up a verse, they cover up Lord in a Psalms text, which one could say, I know this is inside a church, but one could say that was anti-Semitic. You know, like, this is the prayer book of the Jewish people, first and foremost, and Lord stands in for the holiest name of all holy names, the name of which you shouldn't speak, but not the name that should be what's the word I'm looking for? That should be deducted. It's not to deduct it. You don't not say Yahweh because you're deducting it. And here this school is trying to be kind of hyperly liberal. They actually oppose the kind of shared humanity of these other people who in this space have these symbols and this perspective that they think makes life full. So it becomes this very, I don't know, harsh, laissez-faire kind of experience that is all for being open and inclusive, but then they go into someone else's house essentially and are like, yeah, I can't be in your house if you have that picture up or if your wall has been painted that way. I mean, there's just an utter kind of breakdown of what it means to be hospitable, you know? So to give the church credit here, they were hospitable and said, come in. And then the school comes in and is like, yeah, we need your space. Thanks for your hospitality, but we want to shit on it. You know, we don't want to honor this space. And so this becomes a real, I mean, first of all, it becomes something that pastors have to think about, I think, as you think about your own buildings and what it means to kind of engage in kind of civic openness. You know, like what I thought should have happened, and Kara completely disagreed with me, and she's the pastor, so she is right. I think that whoever makes these decisions should have said, oh yeah, totally, you can do that. You can't cover up any of our symbols, but you don't have to acknowledge them anyways. But we also would like one of the pastors on our staff to give a welcome to the community. You know, like just to simply say, hey, welcome to our building. I'm the pastor here. We're really happy to have you. This is a beautiful space that means so much to us, and we want to give it over to you to have this experience of graduation and this time with families and the celebration of these young people in this community. Enjoy our space. You know, there is a sense of reminding people that these spaces are not just benign. You know, like, we are human beings and bodies, which means spaces really matter. And I know we're at this moment when we're talking about the future of our institutional life as congregations and our institutional life as denominations. And we really do want to say, for some good reasons, let's not worry about buildings or let's sell our buildings. And maybe we should, and maybe this is the time for some of that, but we should also be very careful because human beings will always need places to gather. And the spaces in which we gather, I happen to think are going to have to be more than digital spaces for sure. And buildings will matter to us. Spaces will matter in some way. Now, that doesn't mean that it has to be the kind of classic church with a parking lot and things like that we've had for, you know, 60, 80, 90, 100 years. But spaces do still matter. And I don't want to be – I think it is a certain concession maybe to the reductions of the imminent frame to be like, well – there's no such thing as a sacred space, or there's no such thing as kind of a sacredness. No one believes that. Like, we do think that the houses that we grew up in, unless we've had terrible experiences, them they have some kind of sacredness to it. There's this odd way where we drive our kids back through the house we lived in from, you know, 6 to 11 and tell them about the backyard, that there's a way they connect with our stories, our embodiedness, that's really important to us. And yet you can see the multiple dynamics at play here. Like, for the school, the way they read what it means to live in a secular age is to deduct all symbolic representations of the community for fear that they are violent unto people. And yet what they do is violence unto the people who worship in that space by minimizing their rituals and the fact that they bury people in there. Well, they don't literally bury people in there, but they do funerals in there. They make the symbolic moves of both life and death in that space. And at the very least, you can respect that these things matter to these people. Or they could have just been more tactful and got a banner that covered up the whole darn verse. You know what I mean? Like, for the school, instead of like hanging, these are what they look like. What would you say, Derek? They're like, eight and a half by 11
piece of printer paper.
That's laminated and hung on a string. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
at the risk of playing devil's advocate and at the risk of putting words into people's mouths, what I would imagine the counterpoint to what you just said would be, and I'm not saying I believe this, I'm just saying I think this is what it would be, is that there's been some terrible atrocities that have been carried out in the name of the church. And so the covering up of Christian symbols is different than covering up other religious symbols, at least in the United States, because it is all about the power dynamics, right? And it's that act of rebellion. So for some people's perspective, covering up Christian symbols is like covering up swastikas or taking down Confederate statues. And,
yes.
And that's where the sticky wicket gets, is well, that and that's, whole, like, yes. Where do you draw a line in the sand and say, like, okay, this is, this, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yeah, but this is where it becomes completely duplicitous, because I agree, that's how some people view it. That's how this school administration views it, that that the cross, that any Christian symbol is essentially like a swastika. So then don't use the building. Don't ask to use the building. You know what I mean? Like, you why would you want to use the, you know, the Nazi headquarters on the Wilhelmstrasse for your school graduation if you think it is the most evil political regime of the modern era? You wouldn't do it. You wouldn't say, well, crap, we don't have enough room, so let's just use the church. Like, there's a certain kind of – this is part of the legacy of America, particularly being this certain kind of Protestant Christian nation. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I mean, this is, again, like what we said in an earlier podcast recently. Like, let's make good atheists. Of course, there is no doubt that Christianity and even the symbols of Christianity have been used to perpetuate violence. But that is true in every religious perspective, every single one of them. Now, I get your point that maybe not in this country, but, I mean, my gosh, you go to India and you talk about conflicts between and violence done between Hindus and Muslims. I mean, you go to Israel today and the violence that Jews are doing unto Palestinians. There's no religious perspective that doesn't have these problematic realities. So then I guess you go to the frame of saying, well, then, see, religion, it's religion's problem, right? That it's ultimately religion's problem. And then you really need to wrestle with William Kavanaugh's work, which is basically like, modern secular governments have perpetuated more violence on people than any religious group, period. You know what I mean? Like, the yes, of course. Yeah, it has been nation states.
But you got the
states.
French Revolution, and you have Stalinist Russia. It's just, people are just bad all around. I mean, that's the human condition.
There's violence all around it. But there's something that will never get to a point of being able to really respect. We'll never get to the kind of pluralism that this school wants. The kind of open discourse of a politics of recognition, if you will, that this school would be all for, this kind of high level of the ethic of authenticity, if we have such religious ignorance across the board and refuse to recognize the importance of symbols. And this school has so many strong kind of secular symbols that matter to them. But you have to respect that space. And so it's just very odd that a school that is all built on kind of mutual respect and openness then would come into someone else's space and at least if they had to do something, it would do it with tact, and it was just done without any tact. But ultimately, I mean, I think this is Taylor's point, is that you've got to create a space where this is allowed. And we could go into a longer history, because this is really what Taylor is building this all on, and we don't have time in this episode, but maybe we can return to it another one. He's building this all really on this last great Renaissance thinker of the 16th century, Michel de Montaigne, and Montaigne's kind of sense of a way to get beyond the religious wars of France, the 30 Years' War, was to find a space, really through King Henry Navarre, to find a way where you could actually have a country, but this was never done before, that where you could have a country where people worship different things and yet we're still connected to the same country. That, you know, this, it isn't until France figures out how to do this, and then the rest of Europe figures out how to do it in the 17th and 18th century, that this occurred. And part of Taylor's point is when you have these firm kind of laissez-faire kind of perspectives, you mitigate the real work of one of his political theorists, heroes, Michel de Montaigne, who wanted us to really reflect on our own experience and recognize that we can have this kind of form of skepticism that's a really positive form of skepticism that says, what do we really know? But we all are really connected to what to our practices and to our for him to be reflecting on what it means to be human on the chateau, that we're connected in this way of reflecting on trying to live well. And Taylor wants to create space for that. And so does this school. But inside this religious ignorance and disrespect of some symbols and making rules on it, it will be hard to get to that, I think.
When Church Stops Working, featuring Dr. Andy Root, is produced by me, Derek Tronsgaard, with special thanks to our sponsor, Baker Publishing. You can get Andy's brand new book called When Church Stops Working on Amazon or wherever else you get your books. Thanks so much for listening, and we hope you'll join us again next time for another round of When Church Stops Working.